Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I walk a straight line, shackle and chain. Oh, gruesome Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hillstring Gang, Rango the Three.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Bloody Angola, a podcast 142 years in the making, the complete story of America's bloodiest prison. And I am Jim Chapman. Woody Overton cannot join us today. He is on assignment, but we're bringing you something a little bit different today. We did a two-part series. If you haven't checked it out yet, it's called Second Chances, and it features a former inmate at Louisiana State Penitentiary in Angola. He was actually the first juvenile released when the Supreme Court passed a law making it possible for juveniles who were sentenced to life in prison without parole to get a parole hearing after 25 years. So if you haven't seen that episode yet, go check it out. But this week we have a very special episode. The guy we brought you the story of and who actually joined us for the two episodes of Second Chances, we met through our friends at Penitentiaries to Penthouses. It's a podcast known as P2P, and they interview formerly incarcerated people that are doing well as they acclimate back into society. You know, when we did the Second Chances episodes, they were a big part of that, certainly a big part of making the introduction to the gentleman that came on the show. So thank you so much to P2P, and they have an amazing podcast. So we have decided that we're gonna bring y'all one of their episodes, and we're going to share it on our feed. We thought y'all would really enjoy it. We have some really, really big stuff about to pop off for Bloody Angola. And I know that y'all are going to be real excited as we go through that process. But I think y'all will love this episode. It is with a gentleman by the name of Kiana Calloway, who was in Angola for a very long time and has quite a story that you need to hear or that you will enjoy hearing. So without further ado, here's the P2P podcast and their interview with Kiana Calloway.
Welcome, everybody. This is Scott with Penitentiaries to Penthouse Podcast.
Yes, sir.
I'm your host. To the left of me, we got Mr. Beatty.
Your best friend in real estate.
To the right of me, we got our guest, Mr. Keanu Calloway.
Swag out. What's happening?
Special gentleman he is. And then we got my partner over here to the left, Mr. Shane
Big
Johnson.
Shane? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. 24 years successful now.
There you go. We look forward to digging into today's message. Keanu, man, has a powerful story. How I know Keanu is we work on a project together through the Justice and Accountability Center of Louisiana. And basically that's a nonprofit organization full of attorneys and policy people who march down to the state capitol every year.
Shout out JAC.
JAC. They do legislative work, so they propose bills, work with lobbyists, senators, representatives to pass criminal legal reform bills. The specific focus, though, is usually expungement legislation. For those of you who don't know what expungement legislation is, expungements are the things that guys like myself, Keanu, Mr. Shane over there need we come home to for opportunities, whether it's employment, housing, life insurance, you name it. There's hundreds of things that we get denied for on a regular basis based on the fact that we made some mistakes in our lives. And, you know, we've paid our time, we've paid our debt, and we're trying to get past that. So the work that we're doing revolves around expungements and A, changing expungement law, but B, getting the knowledge and information out there, because the average Joe that comes home from prison
don't know
about expungements, don't know how to go about getting expungements. Yes. Furthermore,
I am one.
Yeah, exactly. And they're expensive as hell. You know, you could easily rack up, if you have multiple felonies, several thousand dollars just in paying the state, the district attorneys, and the clerks of court's office, not even including legal counsel. So that's the work that the Justice and Accountability Center do. But me and Keanu are working on a project to get the expungement app through Justice and Accountability Center, the information there. Out. So we're going to be traveling, presenting workshops, getting the information out there so that can access expungements equitably.
So plug in, man. Like, we're going to be in your areas very, very soon. Just being able to alleviate one of the collateral consequences that come after incarceration. I think that we're doing our part, and we'll be doing ourselves a disservice, Scott, if we're not traveling, educating people.
Absolutely.
About the work that we're putting in. In the state capitol, and keeping them informed that, you know, there's issues that you can get plugged into, but you just need to reach out. You know, we can't do this in our silos.
Yep.
It's an honor to have ran into a like-minded brother that's putting in work, you know, on the outside the bars. You know what I'm saying? Because you are what you do.
Yes.
Amen. Even when the camera's not on, you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. It's easy to look good on camera. It's harder to make it happen on the outside, but that's what I like to do. I'm just passionate about, and just like you, passionate about making sure that people have opportunities, man, because I was given opportunities, and I've had a lot of challenges, man, and I just want to see people be able to breeze through that process instead of getting caught in the hiccups. But so I do want to highlight a very successful human being today. As I said, I was able to and had the fortunate privilege of watching Keanu's documentary that's coming out real soon on very, very national level.
Yes, sir.
And I told him today, and it's hard to get me to break down, right? And like, shit, I told him, man, tears. but man, I watched it, dude, and they had some parts in it that I was just like, and it really hit you. But you know, he's had a very, very challenged life, a lot of injustices. I'm gonna let him explain that. But you know, a lot of people see the part of the justice system that WAFB and whatever your local news channel posts up there about people who commit crimes and their wrongs or whatever, but they don't talk about all those mugshots that they post where guys really didn't do what they were being accused of. And I'm gonna let Keanu take it from here, but if you don't mind, could you just kind of share a little bit about your upbringing and then what caused you or what led to the prison, and then we'll just kind of take it from there.
Well, actually, the system led me to prison.
Right. Okay.
We have to understand that the system was built to do exactly what it's doing. You know, people say the system messed up. No, it's not messed up. It's doing exactly what it was scripted to do. So we must always, you know, bring that energy back into the space. And just so happened that I have been resilient enough to really surpass the tests that the system has caused upon my life. I've seen individuals in the same space, same situation, same cell, and 6 months later they hung themselves because they can't handle the stresses or the traumatic expressions about being one, either formally accused and convicted of a crime, or two, just trying to figure out, like, damn, is this my life? Mm-hmm. You know, is this what I'm supposed to be? But not to get too deep into that, because like my documentary, it basically shows resiliency. Right. It shows the true test of time. Like, you can go through these hard spaces, but you have to be prepared to bounce back, because everybody bounce back.
Amen.
So what you're referring to is the school-to-prison pipeline?
Yes.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, everybody bounce back.
Explain the school-to-prison pipeline.
School-to-prison pipeline. Okay, so, I'm going to give it to you in layman terms.
Let's go. I am layman. Okay.
sounds like a good movie title.
I am layman.
Okay, definitely. So school-to-prison pipelines. I went to prison at 16 years old.
Right.
So if I was tested in the second or third grade and I read below a certain level, they built another cell for me. And just the way that it planned out, I ended up in that cell, that school to prison pipeline. If we understand the way that our Americas is functioning, three main attributes of human survival: education, travel, and should I say, I'll throw manufacturing in the building, right? So planes, the way planes first started, it crunk up, like, you know. But now the evolution of planes is that it just take off. You know, they could probably put it on autopilot, ain't got to do nothing but land it.
Mm-hmm.
and it's crazy, man. The car, you know, it crunk up. Now you pushed up.
Right.
Why education is still the same? You sit in a single file line, they teach you ABC 1, 2, 3, and it never gives the whole individuality of the person. So when we speak about school or prison pipeline, I walked through a metal detector when I was going to elementary school. If this is an educational institution, they should be focused on my education and not my protection or not my apprehension in so many different ways. We learn how to stand in a single file line. Walk in the child hall, cafeteria, what did you do?
Right.
You stood in the single file line and you walked to the child hall. I understand the level of control, but that's how institutionalized that we can be. People never have been to prison and are more institutionalized than someone that spent 50 years in the junk.
Right. Concrete walls, fluorescent lighting.
Hey.
Colors.
Yeah.
Hey.
White.
Light.
Blue.
Light.
Light blue.
Right. So
to kind of... I guess give that short synopsis of school to prison pipeline. So at a young age, you experienced that. We all do.
It's a program.
And it's a program. Which eventually led to.
So, and even since those days of single file lines, straight line education, as today we pump 72% of our state's budget into incarcerating someone instead of the education portion of it. It's only 13% or sometimes 7% of the budget goes to the adequate education of our youth. So that shows the level of, support.
Dependence, codependence.
Any word that we want to kind of put into that space, because we must understand that it's systems that we're dealing with. You know, these systems that we're dealing with, has to be dismantled, and it has to be dismantled from the inside. And Scott just said that we have the privilege of working on the new task force, the Safe and Alternative Task Force, which is a governmental task force that was structured through last year's legislation, which gives us the opportunity to properly plan the effects of not only expungements, but the use of solitary confinement inside of our jails and prisons in the state of Louisiana.
Right.
And it's sitting at these tables with the state attorney, with the secretary of state, and the secretary of Department of Corrections, I really start to understand that we are the experts in this field. Like, people are holding these positions and really don't know. They really don't know the outlook of putting the face to incarceration. That's what, like, that's what we need to try to understand. Like, who are we incarcerating? How can we lead the nation? how can we lead the nation in crime? But we have
highest incarceration rate.
Yeah, we have to. Let me kind of bring this back. How can we be less in the nation in education, but highest and in the crime. Nation yeah. in crime and in incarceration?
Going back to you being sentenced at a young age or going to jail or prison at a young age, can you kind of share with us like what happened and then kind of jump into your experience?
So I'm a XYZ because a lot of it is in the film.
Yeah.
Definitely don't want to
do
a spoiler alert. Yeah. But man, I look at my life as not a needle in a haystack. You know what I mean? Yes, I was falsely apprehended, falsely accused, falsely convicted, sentenced to two lives without the possibility of probation, parole or suspension of sentence. Was sat in the trial for my life to be deliberated on. Like, you either gonna get life in prison or we're gonna send you to death row. So, and at this is at the age of 16, just making 17.
Swallow all that at the age of 16?
I had to swallow all of that, and now I have the opportunity to regurgitate that.
Yeah.
You know, because now my pain is turning into passion. You know, it's turning into my why. That's why I love waking up every morning. That's why I love opening my refrigerator. That's why I love playing with my daughter. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Shout out to my baby mama. Shout out to my fiance.
Yeah, shout out
to, you know, I definitely got to say what's up, MT.
Yes.
I love you. A lot of these things that's taking place right now, I wouldn't do it without you on my side. So,
amen.
Yeah, definitely throw that into space. The evolution of life, sometimes, like even riding up here today, I've never been to Denham Springs a day in my life, but it felt like an epiphany. You know, getting off of this bridge, making this exit, I'm like, dang, they got a Canes right here. I was tasting Canes, you know what I'm saying? So it's basically trying to figure out, like, I am walking in the steps of my higher power, my divine energy. You know what I mean? When I was laying in the cell and I was like, God, man, something got to happen.
Right.
I woke up the next day and I woke up the next day and I woke up the next day. So I'm looking at that right now. Like, if we can kind of just think back to our prophetic literature that's in the books. And I'll say the Bible, basic instructions before leaving Earth. That's the acronyms that I placed on it.
Okay.
And inside of this book, they have stories of great men.
That's dope.
I placed myself inside of these great men while I was in that cell looking at these center block walls. I had a 55-inch TV, right? So I read the story of Paul. Paul was a gangster. Paul wrote probably 85% of the book.
And he murked the whole lot.
Man, he was a gangster. Paul used to rob. Paul used to steal. Paul used to kill. Paul was taking wives. Like, that's for me. Right. Let me get that. Move around.
He was more definitely a king slayer.
Move around. Yeah. Let me get that. Paul was incarcerated over 75% of his existence.
Yes.
And wrote a good portion.
And he was a great man.
Paul was incarcerated 75% of his existence.
He was a great man.
And he wrote books that stand the test of time till today. Yes. Prophetic hymns, metaphorical narrative that any culture can take and put it into their own existence. Every line, every piece, every scripture, every sentence, every dot, every comma means something. That's what we need to pay attention to in life. Every comma means something. So if I had to trade my chicken plate so I could get on the phone, see, people don't understand that type of narrative, though. People don't understand that type of narrative. You see what I'm saying?
Tell everybody.
Tell the laymen.
What that means.
So I spent 18 months in one of the most dehumanizing places that ever could been created for a human being, and that was Camp J.
Okay. Angola,
Louisiana, the farm, right?
Yes.
So, cool to one right, cell 11. They got cell 10. Cell 11 was the last cell. They had a guy named Money that slept on side of me for 10 months. Every morning he woke up singing, "It's been a long time coming, but I know a change
is that money
come.
From RCC?
No, not that money. This is the old money.
You know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. Money name was Alpha Baker.
Okay.
Money was in, when I went to Camp J, Money had all been in Camp J for like 14 years at this time.
Wow.
He got caught
in
up
the cell block?
In that same cell.
Wow.
In that same cell. That's why I fight for solitary confinement today.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that, about because I did hear you mention about solitary confinement kind of messed you up. So make sure to touch on that. But, yeah, solitary confinement, man, you'll go crazy sitting in the cell.
I've seen it,
literally.
How did it affect you?
Hold on. Chicken for the phone.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Chicken
okay.
for the phone. Okay. Keep us on point right now.
No, I'm done. We talking trades.
So,
what are we
so
doing?
So here we go. We talking trades. So I was in Camp J, right? The man had come down, shift change, 6 and 6. We know shift change. 6 o'clock, man, come down. Who won't use the phone? Friday. What's on Friday?
Chicken.
Exactly. Who won't use the phone? Everybody hands coming out the butt.
Right.
Okay, let me get them plates. How many people not getting the chicken plate? I didn't talk to my mom.
This is a guard. He's trying to eat.
He getting chicken so he could swing it on the other side of the till.
You have to make a executive decision.
They got Joe's around the corner.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a whole situation here. You only get one phone call every 30 days in Camp J at this time.
Really?
So I haven't talked to mom. Then this was in 98. So my mom got diagnosed with breast cancer. You seen the space. My mom got diagnosed with breast cancer. I didn't know for like 2.5 years that she was even, she come just see me one time and her head was bald. I didn't know what was going on.
She didn't tell you nothing?
She still didn't tell me that. She just broke down crying. But I'm like, baby, don't worry about it. We got this. You know, I'm going to be able to give you your roses while you're still here. Shout out, mom. She's still home and every day.
Shout out.
Yes, right. I give her roses while
Big
she's still
woman.
Here.
Big
if
love.
You can see, my life revolve around the strength of this queen. And it shows, you know what I mean? And I'm going to try to amplify that to the best of my ability. Shout out, mom, I love you. But anyway, so I haven't talked to my mom in like 3 months at this time. You know what I mean? Like, what's going on? Every time I call, now I know that she was going through chemo. So she didn't even want to get on the phone weary. So I'm talking to my sister. I'm talking to my brother.
Everybody
I'm talking to my nephews. I'm talking to everybody but moms. I know.
Mm-hmm.
I know mm-hmm. something ain't right. Something ain't right. She never did this. This is the only... And I was blessed my entire 17 years. Well, I spent 17 years in prison as a result of that conviction and still have 17 years on parole. I'm currently on parole.
Unjust.
And currently on parole.
Wow.
Have 6 years remained. Have been home 11 years. So that was like my main source of everything. Every month, Molly Digg sent $100 to my account. Every month
Word.
For 17 years.
Word.
Man, if that's not a blessing, if that's not a blessing, you know what I'm saying?
That's
within itself, because people, I used to take my 100 and split it down the middle so I could feed. You was on the dome. Yeah. You know what's happening.
Yeah.
You know how it go. You know,
believe me, I do.
This work that I'm doing out here, this is work that was prophetically distributing and manifesting itself in the can.
Right.
I love brothers. Like, I love you. I love, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's how we do this. It's work that we got to do. But I'd be damned if I trade my chicken plate again, though.
That's right.
I'd be damned if I trade that chicken plate again,
look,
man.
Hey, look, since we're talking about solitary, man, if you don't mind just kind of sharing a little bit about, how it affected you, how long you stayed in solitary, and then kind of tell the folks out there what solitary does to the mind.
Mm.
Because I have my own personal experience. I've probably spent 11 months in solitary myself, sitting in cells. But I want to hear your take on it, and then I'll kind of chime in with mine.
Okay, so you want my professional take, or you want my personal experience?
Personal experience.
Okay.
And keep
okay,
it for okay. the who? Layman's?
Yeah, layman's, okay. please.
Layman's, please.
So.
Name of the next movie. Only for the layman's.
Yeah. So when we're speaking about solitary confinement, let me put a definition to that first, right?
Okay.
So solitary confinement is a person placed in a one or two man cell for 23 hours or more without the ability of education, personal contact, air, exercise, everything that you're being deprived of. So I'll just say deprived of all liberty and growth. With no access to human contact.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Mm-hmm. So basically, the first time that you are apprehended, when you get into a police car and they put the handcuffs on you and you go to a holding tank, let's call that solitary confinement. Some people may be placed in a cell with 14 people. Some people may be placed in a cell with two. Some people may be placed in a cell with one. Okay, so the effects of solitary confinement. So what we're triggering here in Louisiana is the term post-incarceration syndrome. Mm-hmm. And that is when a person who have spent a long time inside of any incarceral state has mental transformations that may impede the normal ways of thinking. What is the normal ways of thinking? So now that's where the tunnel comes in. It could be a mental disorder. It could be some similar to post-traumatic stress disorder. You could deal with insomnia. You could deal with claustrophobia. You could deal with depression. You can deal with
anxiety.
Like there's so many different triggers. Yes, mm-hmm. there's so many ways that you can kind of figure it out. So when I first came home, I knew what I experienced personally. When I go to the bathroom, I take one leg to take me a crap. Why I do that? Because when I was in prison, I knew I had to be on guard at all times.
Oh, 10 every day.
Yeah, you can't stand up and fight with your pants down.
No,
it's not gonna happen. Free access to move around. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So the thing about it is, when I came home, I still was continuing those traits until I realized, man, I could take my pants off. I can, you know. I could just slide them down right here. Nobody gonna come in the door and do me nothing, right? When I sit down to eat, my arms on the table and I'm doing what I'm doing because I know I gotta be finished before this last dude sit down.
Right.
That's a trigger for us.
Right.
We all eat fast.
Right, dude. I suffer for me right now.
I still do. I've been home 9 years and I eat faster than most people. I'm in and out like that. Yeah.
So I kind of compiled a lot of triggers that I identified as being post-traumatic effects of incarceration.
So from your stints in the cell blocks and how was your
smells, sounds, certain things that I touch, mm-hmm. Certain things that touch me, mm-hmm. certain people that get around. I can't let nobody sit behind me while I'm in a car, mm-hmm. if I'm in a movie theater. Like mm-hmm. I can't go to a club. Like a lot of those things was affecting me. So during COVID, this where I'm really going. This where 40 for 40 came into place. During COVID, I said, you know what? The only way I'm gonna understand my problem, because I know it's a problem. But when I look around, I'm like, well, shit, what is normal? They, you know, I feel like I'm not normal, but I see this dude here. He never been nowhere, but he more fucked up than me. You know what I'm saying? He got issues. He got problems. You've been out here forever, and you calling me every day, asking me for $20, $15.
Right.
Your daughter needs shoes, right. You know?
But not shame.
I'm just saying, yeah, in general.
I just want to clarify. Shame's a mooch. Damn.
I'm just saying. So just to kind of figure it out. So I traveled around Louisiana. I talked to over 275 individuals, and we talked about anything from, and all of them was formerly incarcerated people.
And that's where 40.
Where 40 for 40 worldwide came into COVID.
That's dope.
I knocked on doors. I took the camera to meet them where they were.
Yes.
And we're going to talk about where you came from to become who you are today.
Right.
And every individual that I talk to, they talk about every situation that I've experienced or situations that I may stumble across in the future. Mm-hmm. And it gave me possible solutions that I could pull logic from. And I'm like, damn, what can I do with this project? Okay, we're going to name it 40 for 40 Worldwide, because I'm going to pull 40 of the most influential pieces out of this space, and I'm going to build a campaign in Louisiana that will allow people to come home and holistically heal.
Right.
Whether it be through arts, whether it be through song, whether it be through poetry, whether it be through broadcast, whether it be through construction, whether it be through, you know what I mean? Like welding, whether it be through any mechanism. I feel like we can do that as a channel. We can do that as a body of individuals.
Okay.
So 40 for 40 Worldwide was to amplify the voices of formerly incarcerated people that have been through horrendous events in their life while serving time. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, gaining momentum to build 40 other individuals in 40 other states to implement some type of federal legislation that will add people returning home from incarceration into a protected class. Mm-hmm. because there are over 40,000 collateral consequences that stop you from getting a job, from going to school, from getting insurance, you know what I'm saying, from going to real estate school. It's so much that hinders you. It seems like people returning home from incarceration is the only social group that America still have permission to openly hate.
I got denied for life insurance. Can't even get life insurance.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So how can we humanize this space? Because in Louisiana, one out of every three individuals have been impacted by incarceration.
Yes.
And we right here, three out of five. And I don't know if the cameraman have a buddy or a sister or a brother, or even if he been to prison.
I'm just lucky I ain't been.
Right, so exactly.
You see what I'm saying?
Going back to the solitary thing, how long would you say in your 17 years that you spent just in solitary, not in dormitories, but solitary
confinement? So solitary confinement, I've probably, out of 17 years, I've spent probably 8.5, close to 9.
In solitary?
In solitary.
Years?
In Camp J, yes.
Damn.
Years. In Camp J, I spent close to 19 months, and that was just from 1998 to 2000. When I first made it to Angola about me being a juvenile, they put me in the cell. You know, they let me out to go in the dog pen for a while.
Exactly what it is.
And that was basically for a year, you know. And then after that, minor offenses, because now I'm a boy transforming into a man in the man institution.
You got to prove something.
It's not really proving it. It's just making sure that they don't prove me.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You see what I'm saying? Right. So I'm not here to prove who I am. Yeah. I'm not here. And that's the type of person that I have been, is that I'm not here to prove that I'm a man. I'm here to prove that you're not going to fuck with me.
Yeah.
You know why? Because much respect is given, much respect is required.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying? So that's how I walk in life. Like, I can have a relationship with Shane, and I can have a relationship with Scott, and at the same time, my relationship with Shane and Scott is going to be identical because y'all deal with me identical.
Mm-hmm.
You feel what I'm saying? I'm not going to differentiate anything dealing with any situation in life. When I first went to Angola, my first time in the field, they called me Looney Tune. My number was 372220. I'll never forget it. I was at the end of the line. We in a line of 375 people, deuced up with tools on their hand.
Yes.
And every time that man looked around, they was hearing, you know why? Because I'm in the back trying to keep up. Man, that dude crazy. Come here, Looney Tune. You going to go shoot
the
you.
Were yeah. Stocking the shotguns on the horses?
Yeah,
because
I can't keep up with the host. I got locked up every day my first month in the field.
Right.
I can't keep up with the host.
What'd you say, deuce, deuce? That's, what's that mean?
That mean they lined up in twos.
Okay.
They lined up in twos.
I knew that.
You're not that lame, man. But, yeah, man.
For the viewers.
For the viewers.
For the viewers out there that don't know, when you go to a Louisiana Department of Corrections, a state penitentiary, you go onto the field when you get there.
You're picking cotton, man.
Actually, we got Fat on here the other day, and he told his story about how they tried to make him go out there and pick cotton.
You're picking cotton, man, or you're going to ride like Fat.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
So
agriculture is your number one.
Camp J was so brutal.
That they shut it down.
They closed us up.
Yeah.
I had hand in that.
Talk about it.
I had a hand in that, man. So it was a campaign. This was in 2000. No, that was in 2013.
We're talking about shutting down of Camp J, if you didn't hear.
Camp J is solitary confinement.
2013.
It started in 2008.
Yeah, the campaign started in 8. It actually got shut down in 13. It got shut down. So basically, man, just being able to lay in those cells and be like, man, this shit here ain't right. Somebody, I wish I had some people standing out fighting and fussing for me. You know what I mean? So when I came home, my first objective is, how can I get engaged? How can I get involved? You know, what can I do? And, man, I really would like to salute again. It's going to be a shout-out hour. You heard me shout-out and vote Norris Henderson.
Checo.
Matter of fact, Norris' brother just got killed, man. So we're going to lift him up, Lil Daddy, man. Salute to Lil Daddy. We lost a soldier. We lost a soldier, man. But definitely, I would like to give Vote a shout out in this space. They've been holding it down.
Long time doing fighting work that most people, don't want to do, but B, they can't do. And those guys, all formerly incarcerated, are leading the pack on the criminal legal reform work in Louisiana. They got their hands in every piece of legislation that goes in front of state capital for criminal legal reform.
They built to do that.
Yeah, definitely.
They just opened up the little building, too, right?
Yeah, definitely. This year. So I was a volunteer for Volt when I first got into the game. You know what I'm saying? Like in 2012, 2013, we did a lot of work around restoring the voting rights for formerly incarcerated people in Louisiana.
Act 636. They had a campaign to end solitary confinement in Camp J.
Well, no. This was kind of before. This was the Camp J space. I was on some freelance stuff. I partnered with the Village Keepers. That was the name of them in Jefferson Parish. I partnered with the Village Keepers, and they were doing some work around solitary confinement in Jefferson Parish. So the work that I did toward Camp J was basically I told my story twice, how it was inhumane and how I laid in the cells and really like phantom and wondered if people were really out there putting in work. And I didn't have the opportunity to speak at the Capitol, but I knocked on some doors and passed out some flyers, got people involved, did a lot of work toward that end. But that was basically a back end thing because DOC was ready to kind of, you know, make amends with that space. You know what I mean? Like it was a dungeon. Right. You know what I'm saying? It was
hell. Kind of a reparation for people.
Yeah, it was hell. Like, it was hell. So what they did in 08 was they shut down the boot tiers in 2008. They shut down the shark tiers. The shark tiers were they were like cells inside of a cell. You got the cells and then you had the big old boot that slammed in the front with the little tray slot right there, and that's all you had to like really move around in. So in 08,
in other states.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So I'm trying to picture my own experience in solitary. So when I've been on it, it's a cell block. Like mm-hmm. Is it something different than that? I haven't been on Camp J.
So this is the view. So a lot of people may not picture this, but you can get it. So if you're walking down the Beavers working cell block, right? Yeah. So imagine you take half of the hall out where the cell where the cell doors are originally at. You take half of that tier out and you bring that out further with concrete blocks. Jeez. Like a concrete steel block will come all the way out, and on that concrete block you have a steel door that slams boom with the clack, clack, clack. You know, so you walk in, you come through that door. And then you walk down that narrow hall, maybe halfway from here to like that door, mm-hmm, right. And then the cells open, and then you go in the cell. So they don't rack them back until they come through the cell and then handcuff and shackle you. Then they come step out of that boot door and rack them back closed. Now you just in the space, and then they open up the big door.
In other states like Illinois and Chicago, Indiana, they call them two door cells. Right, because you have your first door, open that up. When they walk in, it's like maybe 6 feet of space. Mm-hmm. The officer walk to that cell, handcuff you, shackle you, and everything, and then leads you out. Mm-hmm.
And mind you, if something were to happen in your cell, whether it's medical or if you're sharing space, I don't know how Camp J is. I don't do that. Yeah, share
that's,
space.
That's one man cell.
But if something was going down in the cell. And not only are you behind bars, but you're also behind this barricaded force.
You're hit.
You have no way of getting in touch with the guards to come. Hey, I'm having a heart attack.
Can't even hear you.
They can't hear you.
Can't even hear you.
They can't hear you. No. So you're just left to die. And a lot of people that are on Camp J are awaiting trials, especially if they're high profile cases, and different things like that. They might not necessarily be guilty of the crime, but they're sitting back there and they can possibly die because all types of things happen medically when you become incarcerated.
They was coming through the walls.
Break the center blocks.
Coming through the walls, busting through the walls.
Yes.
Who
inmates. Yeah. Are the inmates.
They could bust through the walls.
But they come get you?
Yes.
Oh wow. Yes.
If they want you, they bust, they coming through the walls. I'm talking about so many times that they had to replaster the center blocks.
So they just going to get malls and coming through?
Coming through malls?
No.
How they getting through?
Talking about right?
You can use you can use clippers.
You talking about sitting on side, you talking about you the guy on next
so,
side of you.
So in 1998 they took the block, you know, in the working, you know, in the cell block they have the flap doors where you put your stuff in there.
Yep.
You take that up out of there and you can go through the wall. Yes.
No shit.
Yeah, you can go through the wall.
So dudes was getting jugged up?
Going through the wall.
Getting raped.
Listen at me, going through the wall. Listen, man, that is a world inside of a world, man.
Yes.
You know, so being mindful enough, and that's what I mean by you guys are survivors. You know, I didn't acknowledge my self-worth. I didn't acknowledge my value, but I think my job now is to pump that into you guys, because y'all are survivors and y'all are experts in the way that this criminal justice world is about to be reformed. We can't continue to allow people to plan meals for tables that they never slid a seat under.
That's right.
How can you give me cheese and I'm lactose intolerant? I don't eat cheese and ice cream. I can't deal with that.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? But right. You still putting that on my table when you wonder why I got diarrhea.
Because you just don't know.
You know what I'm saying? You wonder why I got diarrhea. Nice.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, you wonder why I got diarrhea. You wonder why my communities are under-resourced. I got to go find it. You know, I can't buy toilet paper, so I'm going to come shit on your lawn. Yeah. You know, and you know, I'm just trying to figure it like that, because that's what we got to understand, man. Like, life is about who we are. Like, we are life. We are the movers and shakers. We create every sphere, every business. Like, the United States of America is a 501c3 organization. It is a nonprofit. We bought into that. When we were born, our family signed our birth certificates and social security cards and seller and put us into this entity. You feel what I'm saying? So we have to understand, we need to pull control of that entity. Use our democracy. Get out there and vote and put people in positions who have your best interests at heart.
Amen.
Don't just come to my house and shoot me some sugar, you know what I'm saying? And now I'm walking out, I got a banana in my tailpipe. I'm blowing up every time I go somewhere.
Right.
It's crazy, and that's what we're allowing. That's what we have been allowing. And I hope that people understand that this work I do, I can't put a tag on it, bro. I do everything. I do reform. I do litigation. I do policy. I do programs. I do training. I hold peer support groups, like the same groups that we held inside with Project Detour.
Shout out
Project Detour.
That's right.
That was started in RCC.
Turn around, show the back.
Yeah, that's
Can
right.
Can you turn around?
Yeah.
Can you?
I could, but we're gonna wait at the end. We'll get a shot at the end. We'll clip it later.
Like a whole baseball player.
Definitely, man. Right, but yeah, this is
he hitting home runs.
This was an organization that we started in Rayburn, man, in RCC.
Okay.
We started this in RCC, and we seen the impact on the individuals on the tier with
RCC is Rayburn Correctional Center in Angie, Louisiana. It's a state penitentiary.
Yes, yes. And we seen the impact on individuals on the compound. People that didn't give a ratting ass about nothing.
Give us an example of one of the guys.
Reggie.
Quitan?
Reggie.
Quitan?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Reggie was in the block. As a matter of fact, Reg is in Austin right now.
Okay, I knew he moved out there.
Yeah, he's staying in Austin. I seen him when I was on a fellowship with Red F. Shout out Red F. That's my accelerator, teaching me how to turn my business into a business.
Yeah,
I needed that. You know, just floating on the wings, man. I want to say, yeah, man. Whoo! I did like 80 hours of training in like 4 days. But anyway,
who's this?
Red F Accelerator.
Is that a program? Or
that's
a
program. I'm a fellowship. Part of a fellowship. Red F Accelerator.
Okay, cool.
So yeah, definitely partnering with 18 other entrepreneurs across the state. They chose us out of like 500 employment social enterprises is what we're calling our business at this point. Just trying to figure out how can we figure out those key performance indicators, man, and make sure that double line bottom is on point.
That's right. Well, you said you ran into Reggie and all.
So yeah, I ran into Reggie, man, and Reggie now is a photographer. He's doing some great work.
Wow.
He's doing some great work, man. Reg is like really holding it down.
You ran into Reg at Rayburn, and
Reg was an asshole.
Yeah.
Reg stayed in and out the blocks. Reg will fight. Reg will curse you out. Reg will jump on the free, man. He'll end up in sun. He'll end up on snow when it's housing on wind.
Snow is the blocks at cell blocks. Works at cell blocks. At,
yeah, shout out Rayburn. But yeah, definitely. So once we started Project Detour, started with Pat, Vladdy, all of us was the board in that space. So We seen how Reg, and there was a countless other Regis that was a part of that, and we seen their development in that space. Once we start showing them that they can take ownership in their own personal development, we seen it, you know? Understanding that we're not just going to talk about Sigmund Freud and Eric Burns. We're not going to talk about the three personality traits. Okay, we understand. We know you understand what they are, but these is who created them, and this is how they created them, and we can do the same. And once we seen that built that brotherhood, and Reg turned from a write-up every week to a write-up and no write-ups in 2-3 years. So we see that it's working. We see that they start taking ownership and accountability for their own actions. Why can't that be replicated out here?
And that's what you're doing now.
I came home in 2011, man. Project Detour was founded in 2013 once I figured out how business was supposed to look.
So tell us about, so you came home in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about you transition out, some of the challenges you had, and then let's kind of talk about all the, this dude's got his hand in 100 different pots that he created. Yeah. I'm not talking about pots that other people created he's jumping into.
He created
those pots. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that. But tell us about the challenges you faced coming home.
I always was a smart guy. I could say, like, I know how to read and write. So the challenges that I faced were systemic challenges. Mm-hmm. Because the physical challenges, I was able to maneuver around them. For an example, I came home on a Wednesday. Friday, I was working as a crane mechanic. Never touched a crane a day in my life. Don't know what a crane looked like. But I was hired as a crane operator, right? Riding down 4th Street, turned down Engineers Road, see Buku signs, crane operators hired now. Crane operators hired now. I pulled into H&E. Shout out H&E Equipments. Pulled in the H&E parking lots, sat down. One guy come out there, said, "Hey, man, what you do?" He said, "I'm a crane operator." I said, "What y'all operating?" He said, "Man, it's a walk 7,200s, 41,000s, 4,000s. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, "All right, cool.
I got that.
So look, cool. I go home.
I got my driver's license.
I just got my driver's license. I'm 34 years old, man. I just got my driver's license for the first time in my life. I'm happy, right?
Right.
So, Pam, I go home and YouTube University. I jumped on
YouTube. Shout out YouTube University.
That's right.
Man, jumped on YouTube, man. Put in Manitowoc 4,100s, 41,000s, 7,200s, 72,000s. And they told me, man, like, this is what you do. This is how you start it. This is how you, you know, grease your lines, check your lines before you get in there. So next day I went over there. I went back to H&E, filled out an application. Have you ever been convicted of a felony? I checked no. If I check, they're not even going to talk to me, right?
Right. I don't blame you.
Yeah, I check no.
I'm all so, for it. I support it.
I check no. So they took my application that day. They called me back the next day. Actually, it was the head because, you know, minority crane operators are nine and void.
High demand.
Yes. Nine and void. Not like really, really nine and void. And I ain't no shit about no crane. I ain't know you can make $50 operating the crane for 10 minutes.
Yes, sir.
You know what I'm saying? I didn't know that. Yes, you know what I'm saying? $50 an hour and you up there 12 hours a day, but you're only working for 10 minutes, 15 minutes. Yeah. So I went in there the next day. They called me in. I went in there the next day. Had my nice shoes on, you know, my suit. I'm job ready. You know, I'm practicing. I'm ready for this. I'm prepared. Went in there. So the man like, you can start a 41. I'm like, yeah, I can start. He said, come on, let's go. We don't need the interview. I just want to see if you could do it. So we went out there. I walked around the crane, looked up under it, popped the bottom where the lines was at. You know, I always check your grease lines. When I did that, I said, hey, come on, man, we're going to get you trained.
We got one. Professional.
So, you know, that was basically step all one. It took. So I worked there for like my first 2.5-3 years home.
Let me ask you a question. The no box on the application that never came up?
It never came up until my passion of what I wanted to do in life. It started really burning me because I started getting frustrated with waking up in the morning.
Working for somebody else?
And not really working for somebody else. I'm not aligning myself with what I'm supposed to be doing.
Okay, I feel you.
You know, so I'm making good money. At this point, I'm a crane mechanic. You know, I done went to training. You know, I done started getting some things to really, like, put me in a position to be this operator.
Right.
But I'm waking up in the morning and I'm like,
not happy.
You don't feel like you're fulfilling your purpose.
I'm in the tool room and the conversations that I was having a year ago, I'm not having these conversations with these people. I'm not feeling it. And I'm starting to see myself drift more into Project Detour. You know, because now I'm starting to take my check and I'm taking young kids in my community, and we go and get some chicken and sit under the park and talk for 45 minutes, asking them what they need. Now I'm help taking my check, and now I'm helping them get school uniforms and putting shoes on their feet and attending the football games and trying to help out with the coaches and talking to the students. And then I started actually getting in tune with the courts, because a lot of my young brothers had records. You know, they were, I had to sign them off on my reconnaissance because their daddy in jail and their mom out on drugs. So I started seeing that I was needed in the space that I wasn't occupying. I was getting money. I'm straight. I'm driving a Rolls. I'm about to say a Rolls. I'm driving a Range Rover. You know, this is in 13. You know, I got a 12 Range Rover. You know, just came out of BMW. I'm doing good.
Bought by H&E Crane money.
Yes.
Thank you, H&E.
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
Mechanic money, that is.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But when you're not aligned with your values in life, man, you can have all the riches in the world. It's not going to sit right with you. You know, it's not going to feel, because right now, man, I feel like I'm in the best place in my life that I have been in my life. And I look at every day as me getting better than I was yesterday, because my worst day out here succeeds the best day I had inside of there.
That's right.
You know what I mean? That's so, right. You know, it oversees it. It just demolishes it. So,
from mm-hmm. H&E. You just said, "Hey, look,
I gotta go. I gotta start what I want to do. I want to start my passion."
So what was next?
So Project Detour was next. Project Detour, full fledged. Got the board, got the bylaws, got the policies and procedures in order. Got everybody on the card. So we just started doing a lot of mentoring in the city, and then I went back to school. So now it's me running the organization and attending Delgado Community College full time. Shout out Delgado.
Big shout out
to
what's
Delgado.
What's that mascot?
The Patriot.
The Patriot.
Yeah, they're a Patriot.
Delgado Patriot.
And if I got you wrong, I'm down bad. Shout out Delgado.
We're going to go with
a Buccaneer or something, something like that, a Buccaneer or a Patriot. But yeah, so definitely going for getting my criminal justice degree. Actually, I have like 8 more credits that I need, so I'll be graduating next year.
Are you still going right now?
Yeah, I'm attending SUNO right now. Shout out SUNO. So it's a lot that I'm doing, man. I'm trying to better myself in all aspects, you know, not just my personal outside life, but my internal being. Like, all of that comes into the space, and I don't think that I'm gonna be fully healed until I get exonerated. So that's what I'm working on right now.
I'm working with
the district attorney now in Jefferson Parish. We've been having maybe a few meetings, a couple meetings, and that's how I want to close the film, with him saying, "Yeah, Kiana, we think that you have done everything that you've needed to do in the course of your life, man, and we want to honor your wishes and get rid of this."
Are you working with
Paul Connick?
No, the organization that does the
Innocent Project.
Yeah.
So, funny story about that, man. The Innocent Project, they don't work with individuals who's free.
Oh, they only do incarcerated.
Yes. And that was a problem that I really didn't understand when I went to them. Because I probably ruffled every feather in the state of Louisiana trying to see what can I do. Until I was just like, you know what? Just keep walking in your purpose. It's not what you're doing. Is where you going,
right.
You know? So that's the overall piece of this entire synopsis, man. But I think that's when I'm gonna get completely holistically healed, when I could be able to get exonerated. You know, I've done a lot of work, and then once I get exonerated, I want to, you know, continue to be a force.
I want to ask you this: a person, and I'm completely guilty of all the crimes that I committed. So I when I was in prison. I had to, go ahead.
Allegedly committed.
I did all that, and
he was convicted, so it's over.
It's over with. So I was in prison, and I had to swallow the pill. Okay, you done a lot of dumb shit, mm-hmm. and I'm paying for it, right? But I can't imagine the mental that a person must go through in your situation that spent 17 years in prison and not. Have done the crime, dude. Can you? I don't want you to go into great detail because I know you die. But what's the mental process for that?
So it was basically piggybacking what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have done a lot of shit in my life. I have I wasn't a choir boy, you know what I'm saying, when I was out here. But a lot of things that I didn't do, it shouldn't have amount to that sentence, that such severe sentence. But just being open-minded, like, you can imprison me physically, but you can't entrap my mind. That was kind of like the caged bird sings, you know what I'm saying? Like, and I strive myself on education. Because I was so uneducated sitting in this trial, only thing I could understand is objection, overrule, sustain. Objection, overrule, sustain. What that mean? I know when they say that, the judge says something that counters what they say. So I felt stupid. It felt like I was in Charlie Brown. That's how my entire trial felt. And my trial was like 9 days, the first one. Might I add that it was a 9-unanimous jury. Shout out to the UJC.
Now it's a unanimous jury.
Yes, yes, yes.
You want to explain what that means real quick for our laymen?
Yeah, for the laymen. 9-unanimous jury, I was found guilty on 2 counts of first-degree murder, 9-unanimously, meaning that one person out of the 12 said that I was innocent, saying that the state did not prove their case beyond a reasonable doubt, which the law states that you should be judged by a jury of your peers and unanimously deliberated upon. Louisiana and Oregon were the last two states that upheld the 9-unanimous jury pool, which means that 10 people can say that you're guilty and 2 people can say that they don't believe that you're guilty, and you still can be sent to prison for life. And that happened to me twice. My first trial was 11-1. I was found guilty and sentenced to life. And in 1998, with the great help of Christopher Abley, my appellate attorney, shout out Chris, he put together a wonderful brief, and my case was remanded and set aside for further proceedings. And I was sent back to Jefferson Parish, tried again for second degree murder, and I was found guilty again. That jury deliberations were 10-2. So 2 people said this time that, oh, nah, he didn't do that. And 10 people said yes, and I was found guilty again on a lesser charge, which was manslaughter, and they sentenced me to 34 years under Act 138, which gave me 17 years inside of a penal institution and 17 years remaining on parole. Yeah. Right. So, and honestly, we have right now currently over 5,700 people that are incarcerated serving life or high numbers on a 9-unanimous jury. That PJI, shout out PJI, Promise Justice Initiative. They're working closely, trying to get those individuals home on that. But in 2018, I had that was one of the plateau peak campaigns in my existence.
So I do want to talk about the documentary that I had the fortunate privilege of watching.
Kiana's Mission.
Yeah, man. I'm going to tell you, and I said at the beginning of this podcast, it takes a little bit to make me cry. My wife would say different. She says I'm a big teddy bear. I don't believe that. I believe I'm a big lion. But I did, man. I teared up, and it touched me on multiple spots in the documentary. But I want you to talk about that a little bit. And then talk about 40 for 40 and then Roots. But just tell everybody about what inspired the documentary and how long you've been doing it.
Man, definitely. Kiana's Mission is a documentary, like I said a little bit earlier, it's a story about resilience. You know, it's a story about overcoming the hurdles of life and coming out the end still feeling prosperous. You know what I mean? And I've been shooting this documentary maybe about, well, we're in 22 now, so maybe about 9 years. Having the ability to get introduced to a camera when I came home, I learned that the camera is therapeutic. You know what I mean? Being able to sit down and tell pieces about you and not feel vulnerable. You know what I mean? Because you know that eventually somebody may see this and it may help change their lives. So what I did was I just walked around with the camera with me all day taking basic photos. And then I was like, you know what, bro? I think it's time that you start putting your life in perspective. How can you get your story heard? Because everybody has a story. Not everybody make it to cable. You know what I mean? Like, everybody has their intention. So just having the ability to be in a position to where my life work, it needs to be televised. So Working with Roots Renewal. Shout out Roots.
Shout out Big Roots.
I'm the ED over there.
Roots. What's Roots?
Roots is a reentry organization geared to our young men, 18 to 26, reentering reentering home from incarceration.
Is that in New Orleans?
Yes, Jefferson New Parish? Orleans. New Orleans. Actually, we're in three different parishes. Okay. We're in New Orleans, we're in Jefferson, and we're in Terrebonne.
Okay.
Just being available for those young men, and what we do is we purchase blighted properties throughout the city's area, rehab them, give the guys soft job skills so that they may be productive in the construction field if they choose to.
That's awesome.
Yeah, definitely.
They get any type of certifications?
Yes, yes, definitely. So I pride myself on training.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I think that we can't go through life without the proper tools.
That's right.
What I mean? So. Once they come to Roots, what we do, and you in the documentary, you can see that I have that camera setting up, interviewing my young men, because that's the first initial engagement. I want you to understand that I want to know how you were when you first come to me. Right. And then throughout the middle course of this pace, we're going to do another one just to do a recap, a summary on what you have done. I use the poverty stoplight method. Shout out Dr. Martin Burke. He running for president of Paraguay, man. You know I got you. You my dog. I'm on
got
your
my
team.
Vote.
You already know. So I was introduced to the poverty stoplight, Dr. Martin Burke, maybe about 2017.
Is he from New Orleans?
No, he's from Paraguay.
Oh, Paraguay. That's
yeah.
a country?
Yeah, that's
where is that
that's
at?
Like in
East. Geographically.
Yeah, that's kinda like
man.
I thought it was
kinda
in New
like
Orleans.
The Middle East. That's kinda like in the East. That's kinda like in the Middle East.
Okay, cool.
Over there by Iraq and Iran and Afghanistan, but not in that area.
Oh, he's running for the president of that country.
Of that country, yes. He's already the secretary.
Man, my boy
he's
got
already the
president friends.
Yeah, definitely. I'm actually in his book. You could go check it out, Who Owns Poverty. Yeah, Keanu okay. Calloway is in that space.
Right.
He's a professor at Georgetown University.
Before we leave.
Oh, yes, man.
I'm going to need it now before you blow really.
I got some things on the horizon, man.
I know
but,
you do.
Yeah, so working with Dr. Martin Burke, we sat down and he told me about how he identified, how he broke poverty down into six dimensions. Income and infrastructure, education and employment, housing and motivation and integrity and insurance. Mm. And it shows how we can put these indicators into a life map so that you can actually see what poverty looks like. Instead of feeling it, now you can see it.
So how does it work as far as showing the guys? Like, is it a progress chart or something?
So, yeah, definitely. Okay. It gives back in data on, it comes into the red, yellow, and green. So
okay.
If just say that, so what I did was I restructured that model because the way that poverty looks in Paraguay, it don't look this way in uptown New Orleans.
That's right.
You see what I'm saying?
Right.
So what we did was we developed the New Orleans spectrum. I was the only, I'm the parenting hub here in the United States that had this data tool. But anyway, so what we did was we identified, if you're coming home from incarceration, it's practically like you're bankrupt. You're coming home after filing bankruptcy. You have nothing. So income, transportation, housing, internet access, a clean bed to sleep in, all of those are indicators of poverty, but we don't understand that. So if we
and
come home,
vital.
Very vital. They're vital to you reentering and they're vital to recidivism.
Yes.
So if you start with Roots of Renewal in the 26 survey and out of the 26 questions, you have 25 reds, we got work to do. Like, we got work to do.
So they fill out an assessment.
Yes.
And then you track their progress
as we work forward.
Based on that assessment.
As we work forward.
The
tools that they need.
Red to yellow to
green. Reds to yellows to greens.
That's nice.
And we try to achieve that in 4 months because Roots Renewal is a 16-week job training program. Inside of that program, which Project Detour is over the programming side of it, it gives personal development courses, financial literacy courses. It gives critical thinking, transaction analysis. Like, we deal with the rehabilitation of the being.
Right, of the individual.
We need you to be in the right space if we want to send you to this job. So we got to help you build this resume.
Right.
We partner with local construction companies throughout those areas so that long-term employment is definitely
after
in the wings.
Program,
exactly.
Yeah.
Along with lifetime membership, because once you alumni perks, because once you get in the Roots, man, you're a little brother now.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not that you just come through a program or a project. No, you got my seven numbers. You could call my seven numbers at any given time, and they do that right now. You know what I mean?
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, definitely. So. That's Roots of Renewal. I began to be the ED at Roots of Renewal in 2019. I started as the programs manager, just dealing with the programs for Project Detour. I was contracted in through Amy and Brendan, who was the actual founders of this space, as the programs manager. And I definitely just dealt with peer support groups, like how can we develop a curriculum that's going to show the impact of these individuals actually reentering. You know what I mean? And man, we got a recidivism rate of 99. We got a recidivism rate. Hold up. We got a non-recidivism rate of 98.9%. Only one brother. And that's Jarvell. He comes home next month, I believe. Shout out Jarvell. We Big got you out. When you get out here, man. You know what I mean? So it's just trying to stay activated, active, you know, implying myself into a space to where I know that I'm desperately needed.
Man, you're doing it. An Instagram page that caught my eye that you also set up, and it's a project that you work on, 40 for 40. Tell
40
our
for
audience
40 worldwide.
About 40 for 40. A, what they need to look up, and then definitely. B, what prompted it and how that went.
Definitely, man. Like I said, during COVID, me, Dorado Brooks, shout out Dorado, Mark Carey, shout out Mark. We travel Louisiana, man, and we had an opportunity interviewing over 400 individuals that's formerly incarcerated. 400 formerly incarcerated entrepreneurs. A lot of these individuals have their own businesses, started their own businesses. We went to donut shops, we went to sandwich shops, we went to Twisted Wings, Twisted Burgers, you know, right. we went out there while people was cutting grass and washing cars, like everywhere that they were. When we say we was in their space, we was pulling up on them for like an hour, you know what I mean? And we had the conversation, man. Tell me what it's like after incarceration. Man, the stories were beautiful, you know what I mean? So I just had to try to figure out how can we take that collage and turn it into power, because our stories are powerful within themselves, right? So during COVID, me, Dorado, Mark, we sat down on the videos. We kept going over them. So this year, I said, man, we need to do something with this. Let's drop a Black History Month project. Mm. So that's where the Instagram came from, you know, dropping. We dropped one story every day of Black History Month for 28 days. So you're going to see 28.
Nice.
Yeah, and we're going to do the same thing next Black History Month. We're going to try to replicate that.
So it's like an annual thing.
Yes, okay, yes, cool. Yes. It don't make sense to just have it once. You know what I mean? So, we're going to correlate. We correlated stories. We drop one every day. And we correlated these stories of impacted survivors today. And if you could read the actual captions, we're putting them in the spaces of W.E.D. Du Bois, you know what I mean? Okay. We put them in the spaces with Mega Evers. We put them in the spaces with Fred Hampton. Like, we're putting them in the same energy to let them know that, man, the narrative that our ancestors were speaking, and I ain't gonna say ancestors, I'm talking like 40 years ago, 50 years ago, 60 years ago. You know what I mean? The same narrative that they were speaking, you know, we're still saying that same narrative. And I think that, you know, we need to wake up and understand, like, how can we put a face to pain? Like, they went through a lot, but they're overcomers. They're survivors. So, yeah, go check out. Go punch into Instagram, 40 for 40 worldwide, 40 for 40 worldwide. And if you are in any other state that has a jail, contact us, because we're coming to your state.
All right, so I don't ever do this, by the way. Mm-hmm. I normally sit back behind that camera unless I'm running my podcast. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to tell you what.
What's your
you inspired
podcast,
me.
Yeah?
Local Leaders of Podcast, Bloody Angola. I produce Real Life, Real Crime with Woody Overton, and got a bunch more coming out. I've listened to everything that you've said, and inspiring shit. I'll tell you.
Real shit, too.
Yes, exactly. And what impresses me the most about you is you said something a few minutes ago. You give back a lot. A true leader gives back.
Yes, sir.
We are raised in our lives to believe being first in anything is the leader, right? Mm-hmm. You're winning. No, giving back's winning. You have done nothing but have people, in my opinion, people try to hold you down. And it seems like the harder you get held down, the harder you push back.
The harder I push.
Yes. And that's an innate quality. It's rare and impressive, man. So, you know, I wanted to obviously shout you out for that. But I have one question. Before all this happened in your life, were you always someone that was resilient like that, that just had that mindset, you know?
So, in the film, that's the question I asked my mom, because when I went to prison at 16, what I knew when I was a boy, I thought as a boy, I acted as a boy, and I moved as a boy. But when I turned into a man, I had to toss those boyish ways to the side.
Right.
Yeah.
So I forgot how I was at before 16.
Right.
But when I asked my mom that in the documentary, like, that's the very first sentence that I asked her, because I had to try to fathom, like, damn, where was I? I have these memories. I have these ideas. I knew I was a dog in football. I should have supposed to been at Florida State. They were looking to recruit me, quarterback, wide receiver. Like, I had a future.
Yes.
And I ended up in prison. So when I asked my mom that, that's the first thing my mom said. You always were resilient. You always were a leader. You got your ass whooped a lot. I broke a lot of fingernails, but you always were that leader. So that kind of puts me into this place that she felt that I was a leader, but I always knew that I was a great follower.
Yeah.
Because I never tell nobody to do nothing that I wouldn't do. And that's with campaigns. I'm going to knock on doors. I'm not going to sit here and plan something and say, okay, you're going to knock on 100,000 doors, 1,000 doors. You're going to knock on 100 doors. You're going to knock on 60 doors. I'm going to knock on 700 doors.
Love it.
You know what I mean? Yeah, because I know that exactly. This got to get done. And if I don't do it, it's not going to get done.
Yeah. And people would see you do that, and that's inspiring to them. Mm-hmm. I used to tell people, you want to be a great leader, find your broom.
Yes.
Yes.
Always. When you're leading other people, always show them what to do by doing it. Because if you're going to do it, if you own a company and you're out there sweeping the floor,
they shouldn't have nothing to say about sweeping the floor.
That's right.
Better not.
That's right.
Exactly.
Find your broom,
exactly.
People.
Exactly. That's right. And that's the whole thing. Like, a lot of people want to get engaged into anything dealing with life, profession, building. But first you need to understand is, what is your why?
Yes.
Why do you do what you do? If you don't wake up in the morning and love where you go, you're going to hate yourself.
Amen.
God gave us all something that he sprinkled in something inside of all of us that only you have. And that's what you can wake up and do effortlessly. Like, you come in here and set this up effortlessly. You can close your eyes and put everything in the space because you know that's what you have to do. And it's not an institution. It's not a program. It's because I know this. This is what I want to do.
Right. Yes.
You know, and that's what I feel like. My situation is not demeaning. I'm not angry. And that's the best thing about it. When I sit down with DAs and attorneys and sheriff offices and making these connections, they like, well, why are you coming in here? No, y'all didn't do that. The system did this.
Yes.
So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to build a bridge to where this don't happen to another Kiana. I'm not mad at you. I'm not angry with you. I don't want to come home and be no disruptive person, individual. I want to come home, live my best life. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And see how can I be a preventative method for any other young at-risk black underprivileged kid that don't have any resources, single mother household, don't have to go through and endure the pain that I've had to endure.
That's amazing.
I'm a flagpole. I'm a model. You know what I mean? And I walk that space. You know what I mean? I walk it like I talk it. And I'm in every space. I know. Yeah. We could sit down and talk to the governor. I'm going to speak my mind. I'm going to tell him what I feel or believe is efficient in this area. But it's not my words. It's because my boots are on the ground.
Yeah.
Right. I have town halls. I have community teaching sessions. I sit down and ask my community, what do you want, need, and desire? Write it on a piece of paper. Let's figure out. Because we have people in position that have our best interests at heart. Yeah. But if you don't voice your opinion, you will never know. Practice your democracy. Figure out who's running. Don't just put nobody in no seat, because then the mill's going to go up. You know what mills are? That's your taxes.
Yes. Our society has feared putting people like Kiana in positions with power, political positions, and to be quite frank, these are the people that we need to be there to be a voice for the community. If you don't have somebody from the community, they're not going to be able to speak for the people
at all.
That's right. And I, for one, am glad you're not operating a crane no more.
Me too.
Because you're living in your gift right now, my brother.
Man, say,
well,
man.
Look, the whole purpose of the podcast is to do exactly what Kiana did today, is to highlight, A, the trials and tribulations, but B, to really hone in on the success story, and Kiana's the epitome of success, Shane's success story in and of itself. Yes. And you know, I'm glad you was able to come today.
Man, I'm glad you invited me. We talked about it, you know, and I'm like, get me in there. You're like, yeah, all right,
we was eating
get started.
Recently at Mike Anderson's.
And I
told him I need to have him on, but man, I'm just I knew a little bit about you, but now I know a lot about you, man. You're just an inspiring dude, and I can understand why you got a lot of guys in your area, just wherever you go, that look up to you, man, because you're just full of wisdom. So keep on doing it. I appreciate Scott for coming.
Appreciate you for having me.
I want to thank my boy Scott, because I'm going to tell you what, it's the second week in a row. You know Vlad?
Yeah, I know Vlad. Close with Vlad.
Second week in a row, he's had somebody
come in
and inspire the hell out of me.
Knock it out the
and
park.
And I've gotten chill bumps. Yes. Both times.
Mm-hmm.
And just amazing people, amazing. Like you said, everybody has a story.
Mm-hmm.
My premise for Local Leaders of Podcast is every business owner has a story, and I want to tell it because that's a struggle when you own a business,
yes,
right?
Sir.
Same thing with life. And you don't necessarily, you know, have to be a business owner to have a story.
Exactly.
And your story is amazing. I look forward to hearing this gentleman's
Shane's
story
coming
right
back.
Yes, sir.
Tell him where you get that hat at, Shane.
Hey, man, I get this hat at a flea market on the West Bank of New Orleans. In
Algiers?
Yeah,
right under the bridge.
The best bank?
The best
bank.
Right.
Hey, man, look, before we close out, 24 years. That's how long I've done in prison. I'm going to say probably at the 15-year mark or the 16-year mark, I live by this motto. Starve my distractions and feed my focus.
Mm-hmm.
Starve my distractions.
Feed my focus.
That I'm free, I live it even harder now because distractions is more because of my liberty.
Yes.
Yeah. I have the liberty to go wherever I want to go now.
Right.
Yes.
So the distractions are even more devastating because they come with a penalty. If I make the wrong choice, the wrong decision.
A harsh penalty.
That's right. I go back was 100 years ago to 1800s, and I live under the 10-2 law, unanimous jury all over again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so I live by that, man, and I pride myself. That's a great man, Keanu.
Look, that was Shane's intro to his next podcast.
Yes, sir.
Stay tuned. Appreciate y'all watching today.
Appreciate you, man. Tug in, plug in, plug in. Work.
All right, so I hope y'all enjoyed that. What a story. This man still maintains his innocence, even though he has been, he served his time. He went back out into society, and he maintains his innocence and is on a mission to exonerate himself. We'll keep you informed on anything that develops with that. But I hope you enjoyed that. You can follow P2P. Penitentiaries to Penthouses. They do a video version on YouTube, and they are also on every audio platform. You can just go to whatever your favorite audio platform is and search either P2P, and that's the number 2P podcast, or type in Penitentiaries to Penthouses, and it should pop up. Can't tell you how much we appreciate y'all for listening to all of our Patreon supporters. Could not do it without you. That is just the facts. So we really appreciate your support. We're going to be bringing you some amazing bonus episodes coming up. We just dropped one here in the last week only for Patreon members. So if you're interested, it's $10 for the first tier, and that'll get you all our episodes with no commercials. From there, you can step up to our other tiers, and with that you get bonus episodes, and when we do events, we're going to offer VIP access to those higher tiers, and we even do transcripts on there, so for some of our higher tiers. So check that out. Thank you so much. We love all of you, and until next time, I'm Jim Chapman, and for Woody Everton, we are your host of Bloody Angola, a podcast 142 years in the making, the complete story of America's bloodiest prison. Peace.
I walk a straight line, shackle and chain. Oh, gruesome Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hill String Gang, Rango the Three.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.